Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Janine, and you're listening to Lunch with Loudon, brought to you by www.coffeepartyusa.com. Be the Media Project. And today is your day to be the media. Call in, share your concerns, your good news, your good ideas, or even ask questions of the Lunch with Loudon Brain Trust, which of course includes all of you. My co-referee on today's conversation is the keeper of the beeper, which is the civility beeper. It sounds kind of like a or beep, 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 or you can choose, Debbie Lynn, if somebody crosses the line. So how goes it in Portlandia, Debbie Lynn?
Oh, today is a beautiful day in Portlandia. Can't wait to get outside. Cannot wait.
There you go.
But until then, I'm here with all of us to talk politics.
It's true. As a matter of fact, I have to admit that as soon as our radio show is done today, I'm jumping in the Volvo wagon and heading for Mount Hood, where my grandson is going to have his last day of camp, campfire and barbecue, and I'm very excited.
Yay!
Yes, it's true. So I am good to go. I have my civility pledge in hand, but first, a couple of shout-outs. Number one, Madiba. Nelson Mandela is 95 today. I'm old enough to remember when he went to prison. I remember apartheid. I remember the comings and goings as best we could understand him back then. I remember him getting out of prison. I remember him becoming the president of South Africa. I am so inspired by this man, and I'm glad to hear he's getting better and that here he is on his 95th birthday. Amen. And number two, speaking of birthdays, is that my Vegas mom turned 100 years old yesterday. You rock, Evelyn. Many of you know that I often broadcast in Las Vegas, Nevada. I spend months there with her, and unfortunately I wasn't with her yesterday, but I will be soon. So, with no further ado, I want to start by reading the Civility Pledge. And anyone that hasn't read it or signed it or considered signing it, you can go to www.coffeepartyusa.com, hit the About at the banner, and then go down to sign the Civility Pledge. And this is what you'll see. As a member or supporter of the Coffee Party, I pledge to conduct myself in a way that is civil, honest, and respectful towards people with whom I disagree. I value people from different cultures. I value people with different ideas. And I value and cherish the democratic process. So, with that in mind, we're looking for callers at 646-929-2495 to share with us their breakthroughs, their upsets, their ideas. And also you can share those at Lunch with Loudon Facebook page, join the Coffee Party Movement Facebook page, or I guess in our chat room. That's right. I'm sorry. I'm staring right at the chat room, too. So we convey chat room comments as well. And with that, some of you may have seen my graphics for the Farm Bill. I'm just going to say if the House Farm Bill isn't evidence of money in politics, I don't know what it is. And the graphic I put out today basically said, House Farm Bill scoreboard. Corporate persons, everything. Real people, nothing. Who do they think they represent? So with that, Timmy, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big one. I just found out about an hour before the show that I've been following the NDAA lawsuit, Hedges versus Obama, and yesterday the second Court of Appeals in New York ruled that the plaintiffs, so Hedges and Daniel Ellsberg and the other journalists and stuff, did not have standing in that trial. And so NDAA Section 1021B, which allows for the indefinite detention of U.S. citizens or anyone to stand,
yes,
which, you know, is very troubling to me. And,
right.
And that is... That just, to me, puts us one step closer to a police state in this country should it we be deemed, you know, under terrorist attack or something. It's very scary.
Right, right. You know, Tangerine was on our show not long ago talking about this. And
right.
The whole idea that an American could have no standing is terrifying to me. So I'm sure there's more to it than that. I'm not a lawyer. I know some of you who are listening or in chat or would like to call in at 646-929-2495, may have opinions about that. I know the world is complicated, and I know this new kind of law enforcement, international law enforcement, is difficult. I just cringe when it becomes domestic law enforcement issues. So we're waiting for someone to talk about that more. Or you, Debbie Lynn, I know you've been following this closely.
I have, and It just reeks of so much. But with the NDAA, I mean, we haven't even talked about Texas yet again, which is also happening in Ohio. I want to just like slam down the states. It's happening in Ohio. I think I want to say North Carolina. It's either Michigan or Illinois. I can't remember the other states, but all throughout like the Midwest, there's like all these anti-choice bills that are getting passed. In states
right.
that have, you know, Republican-controlled state legislatures and governors. So that's something else that's on my mind today. Joe in the chat room is typing in that he's got lots on his mind with Gasland 2 having just come out, the Stand Your Ground laws, of course, with the Trayvon Martin case, or I should say the George Zimmerman case. And Booz Allen just getting a new $1 billion contract for more spy work.
Oh, my gosh. You know, in full disclosure, when I was making the decision whether I would stay in the middle management multinational world or become an entrepreneur and start my own firm, I was being recruited by Booz Allen Hamilton as a technical expert. But it's funny because, you know, even 20 years ago, government contracting was when you need a talent that you can't provide in-house or when you need a talent for a short period of time, rather than hiring, you found a consultant. Unfortunately, that idea has morphed to this whole outsourcing conversation
mm-hmm.
that has really jeopardized, in my firm, outsourcing was so limited. It was really a short-term, high-intensity activity. Because otherwise, I could not maintain the core mission. I could not maintain the climate of the culture of my organization, and I could not ensure that my consultant's concerns were the same as my concerns. And so it's interesting to extrapolate my personal experience with this to what's happening today, because it's really just a club now. You know, if you're in the billion-dollar club, if you're in the – I mean, my firm was awarded multi-million-dollar, multi-year contracts. Don't get me wrong. But I wouldn't – you know, my market share rounded off to zero compared to my competitors, Westinghouse, GE, you know, you
mm-hmm.
name it. So it's a very different story. But I worry that when you outsource protection – for the State Department, when you outsource intelligence gathering, when you outsource, these feel like core mission issues to me for government. And it's creepy scary. It's one thing to outsource the maintenance of those computers, but the use of the computers, that's weird to me. So there's my full disclosure and 2 cents on that one. But,
yeah. Well, when I was co-hosting on a Monday night with Bobby Rodrigo filling in for Dan, you know, we talked a little bit about how so many government services now are being privatized, And we got into the conversation about when is that, you know, when is it appropriate and when is it not appropriate? Because, you know, when you start adding the profit motive into things that should be government provided, it just twists everything around so that it's not, you know, it's not for the benefit of the people anymore. It becomes for the benefit of the profiteers.
Well, and, you know, it reminds me these days, and I hadn't thought of this before now, but it's so much the difference between consulting and franchising. It almost feels like franchising now. And we know how well that works. Or when, you know, a cable provider gets the franchise for your city, or when there's no such thing as service. They have their own mission. They have their own values. I've been long frustrated with the fact that we give monopolies in the form of contracts, and the best we can do with it is charge some fees or try to do some income generating. But my gosh, I think customer service has gone out the window. I think that the whole notion that these corporations are part of the community, right? Mm-hmm. Well, and that they're part of the community. I mean, the community is just a vector for cash. We are not a part of their paradigm, and so it feels like you can extrapolate to some degree to the big players in the government contracting world, who especially go for Department of Defense, State Department kinds of Homeland Security kinds of contracts. It's almost like you got to be big enough to be mean enough to swim with those sharks, and it doesn't give me high confidence. It doesn't give me high confidence that our money's well spent. And having been a contractor myself, I know the only time it's less expensive for the government is when employees are compensated less, employee benefits are less. But, you know, it's not that it's crazy. Anyway.
That is, yeah. I just posted it, you know, you were headed down this path of like how bad some of these corporate persons are as far as not being good community members. So I just posted a question in chat. You're like, does anyone out there have examples of what good corporate citizens are? And I see Joe has raised his hand here to join the conversation. So I'm going to open up his mic. And welcome to the show, Joe.
Yeah, for any of all the other listeners, Joe Pomponi out of Albany, New York. Well, with regard to corporations and money, it all ties in. I've been, like, the last few weeks connecting the dots. You can do this from the outsourcing of our spy work to City of Detroit going bankrupt this Friday, and that'll get sold off, the school systems, the sanitation department. You know, they want to own everything. It's just absurd. And the reason for it, step back to the beginning of the new millennium and then our financial crisis after they've gotten rid of all our jobs and the government debt from taxes dries up. Tie that to employers not giving substantial or reasonable raises, okay, and you have less money. Money is going to the top. We're getting poorer. We can't afford our services. They take our services away. We run up deficits in our cities. They take that over. Now, I'd like to know when it's going to stop. It's really got me going nuts. I could, at a stretch, go to what's happening with the Stand Your Ground laws. Okay? Well, you don't have a police department. Everybody carry your own guns. And we're back to the 1800s when they settled the Wild Wild West. I mean, that might be a stretch, but where does it all end? You know, I'm at a loss. You know, they're talking about reworking a tax system. I went through this in 1986, okay? And the deal was we would give up certain tax deductions that we were allowed to claim, like paying sales tax on gas and your purchases. There were a bunch of others to get one standard deduction, okay? They didn't put a cost of living clause on that. So So, you know, whatever I was getting off for that then, I'm still getting off for it now, but I'm paying higher taxes. You know, they're out to take control. You know, I kind of narrowed it down to Grover Norquist, that everybody kind of laughed at when he said he wants to shrink government so small that it could drown it in a bathtub. I'm beginning to think he's serious. There was a piece on Lawrence O'Donnell. And
Joe, I can assure you he is deadly serious about that. Having sat in meetings with him, he's very serious. He thinks everybody should take care of themselves.
Okay, what about the Koch brothers? I saw a piece online that Americans making $30,000 to $50,000 a year should consider themselves rich, because if they were in Bangladesh, they would be living high on a hog. I didn't believe it.
But we don't live in Bangladesh.
Right, he should move to Bangladesh, and he should make $30,000 a year then. I mean, I don't get this kind of baloney. I don't get it, because, you know, $30,000 a year, let me tell you what that gives you. That gives you renting someone else's property, paying for that property for them, paying their property taxes for them. You know, it has you driving a Beat-A-Rama. It has, I'm talking a family of four here. It probably has you without health insurance. And it probably has you, therefore, deferring preventive care, especially for your children and your wife, you know, because the people who are the word, you know, this is so rude. It is so rude when people make statements like that, that I really, but these are the, you know, these are the same guys. You're talking about privatization. The same club of people are inspiring, you know, the no mandatory education bills that are now starting to pop up. There's a guy in Utah said, oh, no, people really wanted an education, they'd get one. Well, maybe in Bangladesh. You know, the degradation of the American way of life is terrifying and repugnant to me at the same time. I will end my rant.
Well, you know, you have the one I saw yesterday. In Utah, you have a representative. I'm not sure if he's state or federal. I think he's a state representative that wants to do away with. Yeah, he wants to do away with public education. Now, to my frame of mind, if Utah wants to do that, you know, I mean, this may sound the wrong way, but we could use the money that the federal government gives them for better use in other places. You know, I don't get it. I don't see where he's trying to go with that. Unless they're all losing it, maybe it's
connect the dots. If they don't get a public education, what do they have to have? A private education. Well, who gets the money for private education? You know, as soon as you do away with public schools, then there'll be private schools, then there'll be a lawsuit, then we'll find it illegal to not pay for public schools, but there will be no public schools, so then we'll have to voucher. You know, this is just business strategy.
And then the more people that are uneducated, the more controllable they are with fear. So you can move the voting.
You can move people
to vote one way or the other, and assuming that they even bother to vote at all. And control and power gets concentrated even further than it already is.
Mm-hmm. So, let's see, where else can we go? I had a few other ones here that were really annoying me. The Gasland. I hosted a house party here for Gasland 2. I live in a small town house. We had about 12 people. Everybody had a good time. First time I've ever done anything like that. I downloaded both. I have Gasland and Gasland 2. And it's convinced me that what's happening is they're dumbing down EPA. Now, I notified, forgot who they are, Think Something, not Think Progress. One of the gas and oil company ads you see on TV, they give you the websites. And I'm, you know, straightforward about it. I, just as a citizen, I'd like to know who pays the bill when something goes wrong. So I get this thing back about I'm being form, and please look at this these facts and figures they sent me, which were in Gasland too. So, you know, again, I emailed back. All right, I didn't see anything in answering my question. Let me be more direct. Why do you need immunity from prosecution? You're telling me, they tell you in the snippet they sent me, that they abide by the Clean Air and Clean Water Acts for the states they're in. Oh, really? Okay. And in the states they're in, you have immunity from prosecution. Why? They won't answer. I'd love to know if, God forbid, something happens to this Keystone Pipeline, because that, I'm a positive that's going to go through. Okay? When, God forbid, something happens to that, who's paying for the cleanup? Because the guy that was on C-SPAN from the American Petroleum Institute was touting about, oh, it's all done on a state level, and the states are the ones that are going to get the taxes and the jobs. Well, okay, if that thing breaks, are those states paying for the damage? And the I think they're called bitumens, which is what is in the oil, that's the tar sand. It won't erode pipes. We figured that part out. The thing is, if it gets in soil, like it did in Michigan and the rivers and stuff, and it can't be cleaned up, what happens then? If it gets into soil and it's over aquifers, you can't get answers out of these people. And the thing I love about C-SPAN is I'm dialing in on all three numbers, and you can't get through. But the people getting through seem to be the ones that the guest on C-SPAN could easily answer without a problem. I didn't know where to go with that. Maybe I'm on a hit list because, you know, I was online sponsoring this party and everything. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being, nervous or something like that.
But they're basically, you feel like the energy companies are not being forthcoming with information or answering questions.
More than that, they're out not covering up. They've got
they're
people
deceptive.
In Washington that cut the budget to EPA. In the movie, the people that are affected by it were told by EPA that word came down from Washington that they were to okay the water. They gave the people a letter, your water's safe, but the guy told them off the record, don't drink your water. And it, I mean, it, in the movie, they've got pictures of it. If this stuff were coming out of my sink, there's no way I would drink it. Dish Texas, Eduardo could check into this, is basically going to become a ghost town. That's how bad the pollution there is now. And Dish Network set up their home office there, and everybody in town, 600 and some odd people. That's all they have to do to get away with this in small areas. And our concern here in New York is we start doing this in the Adirondacks and the Catskills, the Catskills. Adirondacks are safe. That's where I am. You start doing it there, you're affecting the water supply for 16 million people. It's called the Delaware Basin. And I'll almost put a freeze on it. You know, I'm going to get a petition up. We all have petitions up. But I'm going to do a reverse. I'm going to, you know, petition the governor. If he should approve this, they must go by federal EPA standards, federal clean air, and pay themselves for independent testing and sampling and take responsibility for any damage done. I guarantee you they will not accept that.
This is sort of, you know, one of my premises in the world today, and that is that marketing is no longer marketing is now a science. And I think you've heard me say before, back in the 60s, we worried that someone would put something in the water and control our minds. Well, now we know they don't have to put it in the water. It's out there. It's out there in the media. And so the marketing message is just as mind-controlling, I swear, as anything we feared being in the water supply in the 60s. So what you have is the best public relations talent on the planet, only affordable by that club of few, you know, that turns itself, you know, it's more than spin. It's absolutely creating reality from nothing. And so when you might have millions of people with a water supply issue, but if all millions of people would not vote for somebody who would support this charade, then things would change. But they know that they're better off spending money on the PR people than they are spending money doing this in an environmentally sound way, or abandoning it if it cannot be environmentally sound. This is just a balance sheet issue to them. And I keep trying to paint the picture of who these folks are. I've sat in the corporate dining rooms with them. I've been in meetings with them. They are absolutely, I'm sure they love their grandchildren. I'm sure they love their spouse. I'm sure they love their dog. You know what I'm saying? But when it comes to money, they are insane. But they're like Lex Luthor insane, you know? And so it's not hard on this one to connect the dots. Sometimes we ask why. You know, and that's what all, you know, Feed the Media is about. That's what our upcoming Free the Elected project is about. It's about helping people have something other than the PR-produced reality available to them, you know? Same thing, we got a question earlier. We got a question earlier from Adrian. Well, I'll let you respond to that, and I'll tell you the other question that's related. I heard you, Joe.
You can go ahead to the other question. I was just doing something in the chat room about the Zimmerman case and something.
Well, and actually, Well, this is a bridge to that. Because a friend, well, my daughter, my friend, emailed in and she said, so she sees conflicting information on Facebook. There's a group in Facebook that says the Zimmerman case was funded by the Koch brothers. And then there's, you know, the defense, rather. And then there's other people saying there's no, the Koch brothers did not fund the Zimmerman defense. And so she said, you must know, you must tell me. I have to know. And so my answer maybe wasn't what she wanted to hear, but what I said, listen, this is the beauty of dark money. You know, when people make contributions to a defense firm, this is not a tax-deductible item, so nobody has to track it, and nobody has to report it. All tracking and reporting are related to taxability or impact on taxes, right? So even if they did, there would be no way to prove it. The other thing about dark money is that, you know, if I give my money to a third party and that third party doesn't have to report me for tax reasons, then I can give them as much money as I want and they can do whatever they want with it. And so can you prove that the Koch brothers financed this $500,000 plus free attorneys? Free attorneys. $500,000 plus free attorneys. Defense? No. You know what else you can't do? You cannot prove they didn't. You know, go ahead.
They run or control, maybe that's the wrong word, but their money supports ALEC. ALEC is
right.
Where the Standard Ground Law came from. So if
right.
You wanted to look at complicity, it would come in that way. Like I just pointed out in the chat room, Tom Hartman posted something. Well, I was watching it live, and it came up online, and I reposted it on my Facebook page. And the inference is, okay, forget this Zimmerman trial, the verdict's in. But he showed a video. And I remembered when I saw it. I saw this thing when it broke. Okay, and Zimmerman at the police station 20 minutes, half hour later, didn't have a mark on him.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
No blood running down his nose, and they said at the trial, Well, it might take up to 20 minutes. It was more than 20 minutes to get him to the police station. Okay? They showed him going into the interrogation room. Okay, again, not a mark on him. And then come the still pictures, and he's got a broken nose, and he's got two cuts on his head. Tom Hartman, he directly said there's something wrong with this. Now, ABC News down there also has it at their website, and they're answering the same questions. So if people want to examine something, examine that. The trial is over. We can't keep beating the race issue. You can bring it up, but, I go after the real, meat instead of the side dishes. And there's something there. And it all surrounds this Stand Your Ground law. I'm playing with a joke in my mind. I may try doing it. So calling all these states tourism departments or sections, and I'm going to be a traveler. I'm traveling through your state. I understand it's a Stand Your Ground state. Is it possible that when I get there, I can rent a gun? No, I don't want a bottle, and I don't need one where I live. But if I'm going through there, maybe I can rent one, and then, when I leave your state, I can give it back to you. Just to see what kind of reaction.
Okay, so I'm going to do a little bridge here. And then I'm going to come back to the Zimmerman case. But I'm sure everybody saw on Facebook the Texas, Welcome to Texas sign that had been Photoshopped to say, tampon inspection station 1 mile ahead. So maybe when you drive to Texas, you can stop at the tampon inspection station and trade your paper goods for a weapon. And then when you leave Texas, you can trade your weapon back for your tampon. I don't know. That's really bad. So listen, I posted a couple things in chat about what you're saying. One of them is the article about the documenting the over $500,000 and counting plus free legal representation for the Zimmerman case. I got to tell you, if this case was straightforward, you would not need $500,000. Just wouldn't. The other thing is I've been on many juries, some of them very serious cases. I think I've sat on, I was trying to remember the other day, between 6 and 8 juries. One of them, felony murder. And here's my conclusion after being everything from district court to state court, the city court. If I were guilty of sin, I would have a jury. If I was innocent, mm-hmm. I wouldn't. And it's because they are human beings who are equally subject to the marketing skills of the prosecution and the defense. It still comes down to marketing. How persuasive can you be? Can you get them to buy aluminum siding?
And the attorneys are not under oath. The attorneys are not under oath. They don't have to tell the truth.
Thank you for bringing that up, because that is exactly true. And as a matter of fact, one case, the most serious case I sat on, that was the opening statement of the prosecution, and they basically said, attorneys are not under oath. Anything I say to you does not have to be true, and certainly nothing, refer to the name, says to you has to be true. And that is the law, and before you hear a word from either of us, you need to know that.
Mm.
That's an important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are selling, and that's what they're doing. So you've got $500,000 plus free legal counsel to use in your PR campaign. What do you think is going to happen? But the other thing I'm posting, right. I mean, where's the justice in that? There's no way a public prosecutor is going to have that kind of backup and opportunity. So where's the equality there? Where's the justice there? The other thing that I have just posted in chat is the story about NAACP having received over 1 million signatures asking the Department of Justice to review this case or to get involved in this case. And you don't see a million signatures very often. It's a million and climbing. And so you, Joe, me, Janine, Debbie Lynn, and the voices in chat that I hear chiming into this are hardly alone in our concern. But ultimately, my concern comes back to this. Bad law makes bad justice. You know, this is an ALEC law. It is legislation for profit. It was intended to sell weapons and ammo. Now, even though people will go on and on about the defense did not use this for, this wasn't the case they argued, it was a part of jury instruction. So they were swinging in the wind. You know, the court, the entire court proceeding had not set them up to judge stand your ground. You add to that gerrymandering, and you add to that voter suppression. My gosh, Florida, the queen of voter suppression. And what do you get? You get laws like this passed, and then you also get a jury pool that does not represent anyone who cannot legally vote, and the legal voting now has been reduced by anyone who can't find their birth certificate. You know, I mean, the studies and the information out there about how poor or elderly or student-type people cannot vote, and all the barriers that are put up to that. So from whom, you know, from what pool of people was the jury pulled? So we got three strikes. This is like perfect storm here of how the mischief of money in politics came to rest on this case. And the sad thing is, who knows in this case? I mean, I didn't hear the testimony. I didn't see the film. I followed it best I can. But what comes out to me over and over again is less that and more the factors at play. $500,000, dark money. Gerrymandering that led to this law in the first place. ALEC that gave the draft legislation. You know, this isn't about what is making the people safe. This is about cash and defending cash positions. And again, I bring you back to the balance sheet. Hallelujah and amen.
You brought up a point I completely overlooked with regard to voter registration. Registered voters are called to jury duty. At least in New York State, they are. That's something I had, you know, so you brought it up. That had skipped my mind completely. I just took that
right
from the voting. And, yeah, you're selecting jury pools.
That's right.
You're setting them up.
Yep. Well, in my humble opinion. And so, you know, my concern comes back to ultimately dark money in politics, legislation for cash, you know, all these things build this crescendo of mischief until tragedies like this happen. And he is hardly, this is like the poster child tragedy. This is hardly the only event in this or the other shoot first, ask question later state. It, to me, it even confuses the conversation. So we can't, it's difficult to have an honest conversation about gun safety and gun regulations because these cases are now mingled in. There are fewer arrests. There are fewer prosecutions. And there are fewer convictions because this muddles the water. It makes it difficult to suss out. And I think that my friends who are actually believers in the Second Amendment and believers in gun rights do not necessarily think that you ought to be able to take this away from your home on purpose, going looking for trouble. And, I mean, it's dodgy. It's all dodgy, but it's a confluence of dodginess, yes?
Or in some parts of the country, you could set up your own vigilantes,
absolutely,
your own system of justice. Now, I don't want to use the term neighborhood watch, but just, you know, people that know each other and have their own frame of mind of what the law is. And again, like the Wild Wild West, you know, make themselves their own deputies and the laws behind them. As long as there are no witnesses alive, you know, I'm not advocating it, but, you know, it leaves that open. Now, Eric Holder, to his credit, when I saw him yesterday at the his meeting down there in Florida. I think he's on the right slant, all right? More than looking into the Trayvon Martin case, look into Stand Your Ground laws. I think you get a lot more done. Let a civil suit go through. See what that turns up, and then go from there on that. But somebody's got to get after this Stand Your Ground stuff. I mean, I won't, but I can envision a lot of people walking around packing guns if they live in states like that. You know, because if you can't rely on the law to protect you, you're going to take it into your hands yourself. If the law allows that, you know, it's going to proliferate. This is the kind of theme he was hitting on, and I've got to agree with him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and how can you be for small government and big law?
Yeah, this just doesn't make any sense.
Well, there would be no law. Shoot first, ask questions later. That would be a law. You don't need a court. You don't need judges.
That works a lot better, and you know, or it's not so deadly in marketing. But when you're actually dealing with real people, you know, it's hard to take that one back.
Well, in the real world, yes. But in their world, you know, this is where I'm at a loss. All right? If they're out to basically take over so that we become whatever it is they want us to be, all right, where's the ultimate thing? You know, eventually it's going to collapse. Throughout human history, it has. It just doesn't work.
It's so much easier to be theoretical than it is to be realistic. It's actually very difficult. You know, you can be theoretical about a lot of things, and you can sort of go, you know, march down this kind of righteous reasoning line. And, you know, this is a confession of mine. You know, obviously one needs to do more than just try to draw pictures on a piece of paper and, you know, do the logic flow and, you know, chart and graph what I think the truth may be. There is so much more to humanity. There's, you know, those subjective things like what is the America we seek to create? You know, you've got to add these esoteric things to it, and you also have to add the truth that human beings do what they do, you know, and that they're all where they are. And at some point, we have to find a way to mutually coexist and sort of keep moving forward on this great experiment afforded by this republic's democracy. Listen, we have another caller, and I'd like to bring in, join up as Tipton Pilot. I'm opening your mic now. Welcome to Lunch with Loudon. Callers. Go ahead.
What you see there is Piston Pilot, but I go by the name One Angry Jew.
Oh, yes, you called before, One Angry Jew.
I make the rounds.
I like
let me ask a question. I just heard they. Who are they?
Well, you know, in context, I will apologize for sometimes my generalization.
The man said it. The man said they. They want. They want to do this. Who are they?
Am I still on?
You are.
Yes, you are, Joe.
Okay. You're coming into the conversation late. We're referring basically to...
I might be coming in at the perfect time. Still just want to know who they are.
There's that esoteric nature there.
We're talking about generally money and politics and the 1% in this particular case, a relationship between the Koch brothers, Alec, and passing laws and owning the politicians that are running our country.
So when you mention the Koch brothers, do you also mention George Soros and
He's not part of
what?
Alec. A-L-E-C.
Yeah, I've heard that mentioned before. There's a big push to harmonize laws across the world and across the United States. And there are think tanks that write laws for the Democrats. There's think tanks that write laws for the Republicans. What's the difference?
Do you think that there's like a cartel or somebody? Do you think
I don't trust
that
either of them?
People?
I think they're all evil.
Yeah.
I think they're both evil. But I noticed that,
is this is an equal opportunity control issue. This is not limited. There is a reason that I am neither a Democrat nor a Republican. And it's because we get into these funny little games where if you do something bad, you did it too. You know, it's just when you, it's like to me, this bipartisan conversation is a bipolar conversation. And the diversity that's represented in these states is much more sophisticated. It's much more delicate than this.
It's a game.
And I refuse to have bipolar conversations about
who's It's a game played on people.
Well, there might even be Democrats among the club of few, which I call them. You know, there may be. I don't even care.
I don't trust either of them. But I jumped into this conversation when you were discussing, you were still on the tail end of Zimmerman. Is that right?
Actually, Zimmerman as an example of what happens, the ultimate outcome of legislating for cash.
I heard what happens when people carry guns. I thought maybe you'd like to talk to somebody that's been carrying a gun for 30 years.
Oh, absolutely. Knock yourself out.
That would be me.
That's fine. But what we were saying, if you wanted to address that specifically, what we were saying is I'm not actually even sure that people who believe in their Second Amendment rights and people who believe in their right to bear arms would agree with this trifecta of mischief that is leading to laws like Stand Your Ground. Zimmerman didn't stand on Stand Your Ground.
He didn't utilize Stand Your Ground.
His jury did. It's proven in the transcript. His jury was instructed with the details of Stand Your Ground. And they said in their interview with Anderson Cooper that one of their problems was that they had not been prepared by testimony to evaluate that law.
You're right, because the defense didn't bring it up. They brought up self-defense. Right, they brought up self-defense.
Nor did the prosecution.
Well, right, so then why did the judge muddle the waters with a weird jury instruction? Look,
I am all for
jury nullification.
The law required the instruction. The law required the reading.
They have really taken over what's read to the juries. They lead the juries around by the nose. They also lie to the juries. They say to the juries that you must follow the law. Well, no, they don't have to follow the law. Because if somebody gets in there who believes in jury nullification, who knows that the jury can do whatever they damn well please, they don't have to follow what the judge says. They don't have to say, well, the judge said we got to follow this law. No, they don't. They could say, you know what, that law's stupid, and we're not going to follow it.
And what we said earlier was lawyers are not under oath. They do not have to tell the truth. And so, you know, this is an interesting – what I worry about is here you and me and all of us that are listening to the show and the people who are in chat, you know, we're all being asked to become jurists, to become sophisticated in the law. And they can tell you this is not necessary.
This is a
consequence of our law being manipulated by people who do so with a balance sheet end game.
Well, think about this.
Stand Your Ground is about weapons and ammo. It is about selling products. It is a vector for cash. It is not about citizen safety. There was no data. When these laws were being carted about by Alec in 2005, there was no data. There was speculation only.
But there is data now saying that the Stand Your Ground laws in Florida have skewed towards black people more than white people. In other words, black people have used the Stand Your Ground law more than white people have.
Well, there's bipolar thinking.
Does that make it
a reasonable law? No.
Well, I'll tell you what's reasonable.
And if you
I carry a gun. Everywhere.
And
I go.
if you have a source for that, let me know, and I'll post it in the chat room because
I love
having sources.
I will go look. I just woke up, so I'm still just warming up.
And we do have another caller, so just a heads up, everybody.
But why
Thank
don't
you.
You? Why don't you? Here, I'm somebody who's carried a gun for 30 years, and I'm not somebody I'm not somebody that just carried it lightly. When I first started carrying a gun 30 years ago, I took training by one of the top people in the country. I've had law training, legal training. I've also had tactical and firearms training. So I know what to do. I know when lethal force is justified. I cringe when I hear these people saying, well, we were taught to shoot them dead. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. You stop the forward aggression. When it stops, you stop. You're not a cop.
Right.
Cops, in fact, cops have to meet aggression equally, or they have to sort of balance it, but that's not what's going on. That could be a whole other show. Police brutality and the police doing what they do. And if you want to know who lies, police lie all the time. They lie day in and day out. In fact, next time I get I haven't had a speeding ticket in 30 years, but next time I ever do get one, I'm going to put the cop on the stand and I'm going to ask him, have you been trained to lie? And his answer better be yes, because he has been trained to lie.
Right.
So then I'm
going to
say, well, if you're a liar, why should I believe you on the witness stand now when you say you're telling me the truth when you lie day after day in order to get confessions or get people to say things that they normally wouldn't say?
Well, here's the theoretical answer. Because on the stand, they're under oath. The rest of the time, they're not. And there is no legal standard that said they must be truthful. I'm going
to
bring in
Area
Code
707. If you lie to a cop, he can cite you for lying to him, can he?
I have no idea.
And you're not under oath.
So
if a cop asks you a question, here's an example. A cop asks you a question and says, do you have any guns in the car? Well, the answer should be, if you do and they're illegal, the answer should be shut your mouth and say nothing. And say that you don't consent to searches. But if you do and you say, no, I don't have any guns in my car, you can search my car, it's fine with me, then, of course, the cop searches the car, and then they write you up for who knows what. You're not under oath.
Right, right. Well, but that's, again, not my area of expertise. I'm going to bring in 707, and
hello.
Welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
Hi.
Who are we talking
to? Well, I
today?
Also came in. Can you hear me?
I can.
Hello? Okay, great. I also came in late, so I may cover some ground. Seems like you've gotten off immediately, though, the topic of money and politics. But just quickly, yes, cops are allowed to lie. People are allowed to lie, too, if they're not under oath. The difference is when you're in court and you are under oath, or the police officer can bring up the fact that you lied, and that usually discredits you. It does not discredit the cop because the cop is supposed to lie in an interview. It's not right, but that's how it is. But I want to bring in back to perhaps the conversation you were having about money in politics and that it's not a one-sided thing. I'm in favor, for instance, of the move to amend constitutional amendment, which would basically get corporation and money out of politics by saying that corporations are not people. Only living, breathing people are people or persons, and that money is not speech, so that it cannot be a protected right to spend unlimited amounts. Now, but that's only half of it. I'd also add to that that corporations, artificial entities, and organizations shall have the privileges and responsibilities necessary to conduct their legitimate business activities. So the other thing we really need, though, is an amendment that is essentially an inviolable firewall between the influence of money and power and legislation. In other words, that there would be, for instance, absolutely no legislator or their staff could own any interest in anything that would be affected by their legislation. There's no such protection there now. I know here in California, ordinary council members in a city council or county commissioners, et cetera, cannot even be at the dais or in their seat when something is being voted on in which they have any kind of interest, financial interest. Why is it that our legislators, our senators, and our congressmen and whatnot could own defense stocks and vote to increase the defense budget, for instance, and most of them do, by the way? That's the kind of thing that we really need, this inviolable firewall between money, interest, power, and our legislation.
Bravo. Nicely said. Well, you probably know that Coffee Party USA sits on the board of directors of Move to Amend. And we're definitely in total solidarity with that organization and what they're trying to accomplish. Our upcoming project, Free the Elected, is totally about freeing those people we elect from the undue burden, if you will, of having been elected by the many but funded by the few. You know, as Lawrence Lessig said, this is an inherently corrupt system that we've allowed to evolve. And it's why things like ALEC are possible. It's why dark money, third-party money, is possible. It's why things like undue corporate power is possible. It's how this legislation even occurs. And you might have heard me say earlier, bad law makes bad justice. You know, we have to reconnect law and order with justice and not have it be what I called earlier a vector for cash and a balance sheet, you know, consideration only. Ultimately, I think all of that goes back. The thing I brought up early in the hour was I just did a graphic you can see on the Lunch with Loudon Facebook page. It's called the House Farm Bill Scorecard. Corporate person, everything. Real people, nothing. You know,
right.
Who do they think they represent? So,
or the TPP, which, 600 members of industry and commerce and corporations are negotiating a trade, so-called trade bill, the TPP, and not a single ordinary citizen and only two or three senators have been permitted to even see what they're working on. It's,
well, you know, here in Oregon,
and they've
been
sworn not to share it with anyone.
Right. Well, and here in Oregon, our Senator Ron Wyden is a biggie about secret legislation, and he's on. Mm. He's always beating the drumbeat about, you know, you cannot, in good conscience, fund the Patriot Act because there are too many classified parts that you have never read, you know, and same thing with trade agreements, same thing with, it's actually becoming more and more common than people know. And again, what we said earlier is that marketing has become a science. You got the best PR guy, you're going to have the best results in the public court of affairs, so to speak. And so I could not be more with you. You know, I didn't catch your name, though. I don't like
Tim
that
Williams.
Name. Tim. So,
yeah.
And so your statement is brilliant because this firewall has to do with campaign finance reform. It has to do with, you know, promises of future employment. It has to do with, if you know, the whole lobbying culture. It has to do
the revolving door.
Exactly. And, you know, so again, there's just, right now there is a perfect storm of this going on, I say. And by helping people understand what you articulated so clearly, hopefully we'll have people checking out articles, looking to Move to Amend, filing CoffeePartyUSA.com, you know, going to into that mode of thinking that makes it possible to resist with the guys who are trying to sell you aluminum siding, no offense to salesmen, a good salesman is a saint. But, you know, that's what it is. It's sales, it's marketing, it's conversation, and it's got a bottom line attached to it. And I, for one, understand that our government is not for sale.
And what people should always ask themselves, if a entity such as a corporation, which has no moral compass, They are really just profit, period. That's all they're supposed to worry about. If they actually had the power, or a consortium of them and the very wealthy had the power to affect legislation and our votes and our thoughts to increase their profits, even at our own detriment, would they? And the answer is, of course they would. And then the next question is, can they? Do they have, as you say, the ability to have these incredibly powerful public relations processes, multiple avenues of misinformation and whatnot? Would they use it? Yes. Can they? Yes. Do they? Of course they do. And once people become aware of it on that level, they would want it to stop. They would understand that is undue influence. And additionally, with this firewall concept, if you ask ordinary citizens, I think the overwhelming majority would say, what? They can vote to increase their profits. They can, someone like Dick Cheney, whose profits went up, what, 4,000% or something after we invaded Iraq, that's okay. Most, I would say, that overwhelming majority of people would say that's just flat wrong. And that's what we need, is a core issue that virtually everyone agrees on. Why can't we get there?
Well, again, we're fighting the biggest marketing, the best PR people on the planet. You know,
and so you see the very evidence of it is the fact that we can't get there.
We're having trouble.
We're divided. We're fighting over left and right. We're fighting over religion. We're fighting over a lot of, I consider, derivative issues.
You're absolutely right. You're 100%. I am behind you in everything you said. What I would chime in relation to owning government, so to speak, the government contracts. These are major trading corporations. They're on the stock exchange. They use their profits to contribute to the people that get in office for both parties. All right?
Mm-hmm.
You have multinationals. Now, I hope we'll understand multinationals operate all over the world. If I have a network gathering information, okay, and I can buy the services of one of these corporations to gain information in another country, and they have networks set up to gather that information, who profits from that? This is the kind of thing that I've kind of been putting together. And that firewall you talked about is the best possible answer. I'd like to see a company, a corporation, try to buy the FBI. Maybe they could buy people in it, but they can't control it. It's a government entity, right? It has an inspector general. These corporations don't have inspector generals. They're private entities. You want to do anything, you have to sue them. Right? Good luck with that, because I'm telling you right now, they're fracking all over the country. People are being hurt by it, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. They set up laws exempting them. So, you know, that firewall is a great idea, and the extent to which the money and the corporate power has incepted our government, okay, is absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, finish up, because we're coming to, we've actually gone over. I just want to acknowledge to our listeners that we've passed our normal hour, but we'll wipe it up in a few. Stick with us. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, actually, I've said what I had to say, and I really appreciate how you have recognized this and what you've been doing. I'm sorry, really, I haven't gotten involved with the party, and I certainly, when I am more able to get engaged, I'm going to do that. So I've really appreciated the show. I'm sorry it came in so late, but thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you very, very much. So, everyone, this has been a tremendous conversation, and I know that it's just sort of the beginning. It's easy for me to take mischief, mayhem, and confusion and track it back to, that's on purpose, here's why, and then, you know, sort of credit to team, divide and conquer. So let's continue this conversation when we're together next. We're going to get to talk about, next week we'll be talking about coffee party opportunity to go to town halls and congressional offices during the August recess. and we'll give you more details and opportunities then. Meanwhile, I want to take just a second to explain to you that there are several Coffee Talk radio shows. Monday, Dan Aronson hosts Press One for Democracy at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Tuesdays, Michael Charney and Eric Beiler host The Middle Ground, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Thursdays, as always, here you are, noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, Lunch with Loudon. And Saturday, Xavier Willis hosts Politics Done Right, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Soon, John Cashon, a member of the board of directors of Coffee Party USA, will start a project called Civic Minutes, and he'll be broadcasting that on Blog Talk, and I'm looking forward to it immensely. Coffee Party USA is a totally grassroots-funded organization. Citizens United has not benefited us. If you'd like to become a member, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com and find the big red member button. You can also donate if you'd rather. Go, again, www.coffeepartyusa.com/donate and click on Free the Elected. Thank you so much for your partnership. Debbie Lynn, this has been a great show.
Lively conversation today. I want to thank everybody for who's called in and the question on Move to Amend, and it's one of our sister organizations. So great to have a caller calling in today on Move to Amend.
Well, thanks, so everyone. Absolutely. Thanks, everyone. This has been a wonderful conversation. It wouldn't be the same without you. Coffee Party on. Mm-hmm.